Welcome to Lawmen, the podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm James Shakeshaft.
And I'm James's priest and confessor, Alistair Beckett King. Our first tale is really a very famous legend from Washington. All right, I'm about to tell you an extremely, extremely famous story. I think it might be the... because we're supposed to do obscure stories, but this is extremely famous in County Durham.
Right.
And it is the story of... Don't sneer at that. You don't realise how famous this story is.
Okay.
It's the story of the Lambton Worm.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard the story of the Lambton Worm?
It does ring a bell.
From when I've told you about it in the past, possibly.
Maybe. It sounds... Is there like a Lambton... Is there like a Lambton pie or something? Is there some sort of food... Or has it just got lamb in it that makes me think of food?
I think that's it. There is no Lambton pie.
Okay.
Do not look for a Lambton pie.
Because it's made
in
out
the story.
Of worms. It is disgusting.
The story of the Lambton Worm is incredibly, incredibly popular in the Northeast. And it's one of those things that, in fact, you don't realise isn't famous across the whole world. And that will come up in the story.
Right.
Our belief that this is really famous. The story begins with young Lambton, who is the son of Lord Lambton, mm-hmm. a local nobleman.
Mm-hmm.
And he was what is in the Northeast referred to as a bad lad, a wrong'un. Yeah?
The kid, young
Lambton. He's a young adult, a teenager, a classic naughty, rebellious teenager. And the story takes place in Washington, D.C., by which I mean Durham County.
Oh.
An area called Washington, which is no longer in Durham, but I think was part of Durham at this time.
Right.
So it's somewhere between Newcastle, Sunderland and Durham, if you can imagine that, the triumvirate of the three great cities of the Northeast. Yeah, there's three. They make a triangle.
Are they all in a line on the
They're
coast?
They're not in a line. Sunderland and Newcastle are, but Durham's not.
Okay.
So we're in Washington. And on Sunday morning, when everyone else was going to church, young Lambton instead went out fishing in the Weir, which is the river that runs through Durham. Yeah.
A Weir?
The Weir, W-E-A-I. It's the name of the river.
That must be confusing for the water people.
I think there is a Weir in the river
Weir. In the Weir, the Weir Weir?
I don't think we call it that. What is a Weir?
A Weir is like, I think, I'm not sure what its use is. I don't know if it's to slow down a river or something. It's like a half dam, I think.
Mm.
A Weir. Weir. Imagine Peter Weir at the Weir Weir. Being weird.
I don't know whether there's a weir in the weir. I may never know.
Well, it's impossible to ask anyone. They'd laugh you out. Is it weir weir? Is there a weir weir here?
Luckily, nobody in Durham talks like that.
The weir weir is over there.
It's in Durham, it's got two syllables, so it's weir. So it's proper weir. In the river weir.
How would you say... Where's the weir weir?
Where's the weir weir?
Where's the weir weir?
You haven't even let me get to the inciting incident in this story before you've already mocked the Durham accent, which is going to come up again. So he goes fishing in the weir, and every time he catches something he's not happy with, he curses the day, he curses the river, he curses possibly God himself, I can't remember.
Oh.
And the people going to church are listening, going, oh, on a Sunday morning, you know, swearing like that at the river. Terrible behaviour.
Swearing like that at the river.
And then he pulls up a reet ugly fish, a worm, in fact, the ugliest thing he's ever seen. And he says that it looks like he's pulled up the devil himself to an old man. And an old man going past goes, oh yeah. Because the people recording this felt it was necessary to have a witness for that bit of the story.
The old man going past says, so what's that, mate?
It's devil. Shouldn't you be in church? Shut up. So he goes, oh, this is horrible. And he can't be bothered taking it home. So he throws it down a well. That's the beginning of the story. At this point, I'm going to, and this is to my great embarrassment, I'm going to have to sing the next bit of the story.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Not just your embarrassment.
I know. I can't sing. So we might cut this. So the story is best known in the Northeast because it was immortalized in pantomime in the 19th century. And I feel like I've seen some of the podcast stats, so I know we have some listeners who aren't from the UK, so I think I have to explain what a pantomime is. It's like if you took Commedia dell'arte crossed with like Weimar Germany cabaret, like the film Cabaret, crossed with an offensive 70s sitcom, but for children.
So throwaway sweets.
You get free sweets. So it's a bit like vaudeville, like a musical form of entertainment. Big, huge in the 19th century, still popular now, but not that popular.
It's more, nowadays it's more a vessel for people that used to be on Gladiators.
Yeah, and soap opera actors in the sad tail end of their career.
I actually, when I was working as a cameraman, we did a bunch of interviews at a launch of like some panto group that did loads of different ones. And they were, all the stars were there in dressed in costume. I can't remember where, in somewhere in London. And they're all there. There was, who's the gang's guy? Ross Kemp. Ross Kemp was there dressed as like Baron Hardup or something. Kim and Aggie.
Oh, yeah. As the Ugly Sisters? That's rather offensive.
That's a bit rude.
Yeah, but they are also awful people.
And they probably were wicked in some. Maybe they were, because they did a cleaning program, they were probably fairies. Like cleaning up fairies. Mickey and Jane Rooney.
Oh.
I think his wife's name was Jane. Definitely Mickey Rooney.
Wow.
And his wife.
Really, I mean, he's a proper star.
I think that is the most famous person I've ever met.
You have name dropped all over my story.
Yeah, go on.
I have to say.
Sorry.
And I've got to be better than Mickey Rooney, as buttons. So, from the Lambton Worm song, which is sung in my school many a time.
That's what I was trying to distract from, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm still going to have to sing it. And I might, if it doesn't work, I'll just read it. the Lambton Worm song. On Sunday morn, young Lambton went a-fishing in the weir, and catched a fish upon his hook. He thought it very queer. But what na kind of fish it was, young Lambton couldn't tell. He wouldn't be fashed to carry it yem, so he hoid it doon a well. Yeah, so that's the bit that I've just told you. Hoid, of course, is throwed. Wouldn't be fashed, just couldn't be bothered. These are all words that are still used in the Northeast. Hoid. He wouldn't be fashed to carry it yem, so he hoid it doon a well. And then the chorus, which is the bit everybody loves, is weesht, lads, had your gobs, I'll tell you all an awful story. Weesht, lads, had your gobs, and I'll tell you boot the warm. And it tells you something about the Northeast, that the chorus of a song has to be, guys, just shut up for a minute. I'm trying to tell you about the worm.
And they have to repeat that twice.
Yeah, exactly. Just shut up. Please. It's a panto. I've written a panto. Shut up. That's the whole chorus in between every verse. So, that's been clear. He couldn't be bothered to carry it home, so he hoisted it. He couldn't be bothered to carry it home, so he hoisted it down a well. What happens next is, two things happen. The story splits. Lambton goes off to fight in foreign wars. So Lambton reforms himself and goes off and joins the Crusades.
Right.
Because going away to kill Muslims is considered an awful lot better than fishing on a Sunday. The terrible crime of fishing on the wrong day.
And swearing at a river.
It's much better than going off to just kill people overseas in the Holy Land. So that's what he did. Meanwhile, the worm, according to the song, and this, I think this is some of the best lyricism. I'm just going to read this. Some of the best lyricism you're going to hear.
Mm.
But the worm got fat and growed and growed and growed an awful size.
Oh.
That's three times it grew. So it grew and grew and grew in the sweet water of the well.
Sorry, Northeast and lyrics. calls to mind PJ and Duncan from Let's Get Ready to Rumble. They boast...
A.K.A. Anton Deck, for younger listeners.
Yeah. They boast that they have so many lyrics, they're frightened to use them. The next line, so many lyrics. We've got them in stores.
Oh, those crazy cats.
Nice ref.
To this day, people in the Northeast still laugh. Ha-ha, ha-ha, ha-ha. So the worm got big enough that it could crawl out of the well, and it coiled itself around a stone in the middle of the weir. And at night time, it would come out. It would suck the milk out of cows. It had nine holes down the sides of its face. That's a ugly detail. And it would eat sheep and bairns, which means kids, if in their beds.
Oh God!
And then my favourite version of the story, it is a very milk obsessed worm from the Monthly Chronicle of North County Law and Legend, 1888. We have the phrase, it sucked milk of sucked cows of their milky treasure. Which I really like. I think that's lovely.
Milk.
AKA milk. to apply the adjective milky to milk, it's almost tautology.
Mm.
So the main story was recorded in 1820 by Robert Surtees. which is a properly good northeastern name, in the history and antiquities of the county Palatine of Durham. The worm started to terrorise people, and the lampstand came up.
After eating kids, it's
the, so it ramps up.
Yeah.
They learn to sate it by giving it the milk of nine kai, or nine cows. Mm. So they bring it into the courtyard, and a massive horse trough would be filled with the milk of nine cows every day.
What?
And it would come in there, and it would drink the milk, and then it would go back. And now it was so big that instead of calling itself Around the Rock, it would call itself around either Worm Hill, which is in Washington and is still called Worm Hill to this day, which is a very mysterious hill. There's a website dedicated to a weird geography, and it's a very flat area, and then there's just a hill in the middle of nowhere, so nobody knows what it is. And it was either that, or it was Pensher Hill, which is what most people now believe. And Pensher Hill is an absolutely massive, massive hill that you can see from most of Durham. So it probably wasn't that hill. Mm. Otherwise, it would be enormous. But these days, we say that he coiled himself nine times around Pensher Hill, or seven times. The numbers change. So apparently, if anyone took at the tiniest amount of milk, like if one of the farmhands took a little bit of milk out of the worm's pail, he would get so angry that he would thrash his tail and tear up trees with his tail and smash them down. So, naturally, many knights errant came and tried to kill the worm. And what the worm would do is they would wrap and coil themselves around the man and crush them to death. We're in a pickle.
Mm.
Fortunately for the people of the Northeast, the Lambton worm is so famous that word of it reaches young Lambton in Palestine. And he realises he has to go home to put right what he did wrong by hoying it doon the well. So he comes straight back from Palestine, which I assume takes ages in those days. He's so sorry, and he apologises to a father. He says, I've got to be the one to kill the worm. First, though, he consults a local witch. And I'm going to read, because I really like the language of it, I'm going to read the 1888 version of it. Now there dwelt in a lonely hut an aged wife, wrinkled and yellow, with matted locks and piercing eyes and rugged screaming voice. Her commune was with the dead and the lost, and the outer darkness whence come pestilence, devilry, despair, and death to the children of men. To her the troubled chieftain went, that he might know the dreadful truth of all mischief, and perhaps how this ill should be undone. The witch was crooning over her smouldering fire of stolen wood, humming the not legally acquired wood, but stolen wood, humming the mystic chants of her darksome craft as she dozed above the dying embers.
She was crooning over the fire.
Yeah, the Bing Crosby maybe.
Yeah. But she's got a screech. What was her voice?
A screaming voice.
A screaming
voice. Which comes every time she speaks later on. She's
sorry. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. That's more Noddy Holder, though, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, you did. Yeah. So this is the scene when young Lambton arrives, and she says, "Here's what you do. You go to the armourer and you get a suit of armour made with spearheads embedded in the whole of the surface, so you're all spiky.
Clever.
And then you go and fight the worm." On the rock in the middle of the River Weir, the rock from earlier, the one it used to coil around.
Right.
Oh, there's an important detail, which is that one of the other reasons that the other knights couldn't kill him is that it had the power of, quote, self-union, meaning you hack the tail off, it goes back together.
Oh.
And so it cannot be killed. So she gives him that advice, but comes at a price. And that is when he's killed it, he has to kill the first living thing he sees on his way home.
Oh.
So he says, all right, and he makes an arrangement with his father, Lord Lambton, that he's going to blow his bugle horn three times when he's killed the worm, and then the father will send out his favourite dog, it says.
Oh.
Not his least favourite dog, he's going to send him his favourite dog, and he'll kill that dog. We can all assume that's going to work out perfectly.
Yeah.
He goes out on the River Weir, banging his shield, saying, come at me, and the worm attacks. And there is the fight of a lifetime. Just imagine if it was animated by a Japanese animator, how impressive this would look.
Oh, yeah.
The worm tries to coil around him, but of course the spikes dig into the worm's flesh, so every time he coils, he gets weaker. And he hacks off its tail, and then he realises the wisdom of the witch, because it just washes away down the weir.
Oh, that's why you're doing it.
That's why he's doing it in the middle. So he's hacking, and all the parts wash away, and eventually he kills the worm. And I can't help but worry that just further down the River Weir, it reforms, terrorising someone in Denmark when it washes out to sea. But anyway, as far as we know, it's completely dead. He blows on his bugle horn, and his dad is so pleased that he forgets about the dog plan and runs out to meet his son, and he sees his own father first.
Oh.
But he's not prepared to kill him, so he says, just get the dog and we'll kill the dog and we'll hope that works. They kill the dog. It doesn't work.
Still the favourite dog.
The favourite dog. They kill the favourite dog, and it doesn't work. And so the witch screeches, the witch rippers at this point to scream something about, that's it, the Lamptons will be cursed for 9 generations.
Ooh.
And none of them will die in their beds. Which Lambton doesn't think is that bad, because they are all knights, so it is quite normal for them. And a few people have tried to top this up or work out from this when it happened, but we know at least that the ninth generation Lambton died while crossing a bridge in this area. And at least 2 or 3 of the other Lamptons didn't die in their beds. So the curse seems to have carried on for many hundreds of years after this. So that is the story of the Lambton worm. And now, in a last-ditch attempt to gain extra points, I want to add that it has a celebrity endorsement.
Ooh.
You didn't believe that the story of the Lambton Worm has spread far and wide, but I have a celebrity endorsement for you, which you're not going to be able to guess it, but when you hear it, you're going to think, of course! The celebrity endorsement for the Lambton Worm is Roxy Music's Brian Ferry. Of course!
Of course.
Roxy Music's Brian Ferry has recorded a version of the Lambton Worm song that I butchered for you earlier on.
Oh.
And it is dreadful. I don't use the word god-awful that often. But how, you ask, how did such a not-that-famous story reach the ears of Roxy Music's Brian Ferry?
Mm.
He's from Washington, the area exactly where the story happens.
Right.
That's the reason he's heard it. But while looking around on YouTube, I also found that this is not an endorsement, but it's definitely something that I will put a link to Brian Ferry's version in the show notes on the website, and I advise you to not listen to it because it's worse than mine. But there is a really nice animation. Someone called Cary Nutman, when he was 12 years old in the 1960s, started animating a version of it. And it took him about 10 years to finish it. And he's put it online with him singing it. And so it's a wonderful 8mm animation recorded in sort of shake. And basically, it's the creepiest thing in the world. A child's animation of a story of a horrible monster. But it's absolutely wonderful. So Cary Nutman's version of it, I'll put a link to that. And I strongly recommend you have a look at that.
I blooming will.
I have to say, one of the things that I enjoy in a weird way about it is that the Reet Ugly worm that he catches looks very much like...
Oh. Well,
yeah. And it's been drawn by a 12-year-old, so...
But they're the best. They're the people that draw him the most.
Yeah,
a 12-year-old boy has drawn...
I'm sure he was unaware of what he was drawing. But it's a wriggling on the end of a hook until he... As you would... How are you doing well?
Right, yeah, I'll go and have a look at this 12-year-old's drawing of a...
Please do. Please do. If the internet were invented for anything. Let's maybe cut some of that.
Yeah.
Let's trim that down a little.
To the scores.
Category the first. Naming. What do you mean? The Lambton Worm.
It's a worm, so there's a big...
But it's not like... So it's. I assume it is spelled W-O-R-M, but I assume it's worm in the sense of W-Y-R-M. Which is the old word for like dragon. So it's not like a wiggly wiggly little worm.
It's a big worm.
Worm.
Worm. It's a worm.
Worm. Say it with a kind of bit of showmanship.
It's a worm with 9 holes. Worm.
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 Is it sounding any better?
You little worm.
Yeah, but imagine a big worm.
that's
essentially the pitch.
A sticky together big worm.
You know you don't like worms, yeah? What if one was big?
One was really big. Big? How big? Big enough to go around a hill? Okay. Yep. That's
like 7 times.
Is it a big hill?
It's a big hill.
Yes. And it's a... Again, as I already said with the Lambton, that sounds like a nice little treat, a Lambton. And then a worm. And then what's the guy? And he's just called...
He's John Lambton.
John.
Or I think Janus Janus, one of the old versions, middle-aged versions of it.
Come on.
Middle-aged.
Scrabbling
from
around.
From the olden days.
Scrabbling around there.
There's a carving on Lambton property that there was in the 19th century of Lambton there with his spike-head armour and a sword and a woman with bare breasts and wounds. No, it's just a bit of colour.
Wounds?
Yeah, as if she's been attacked by the worm, and then the worm's there, and he's stabbing it.
Oh, okay.
But like Hollywood, they've thrown in a sexy lady character who isn't in the story, just because, sculpture.
I thought she had wounds because he'd forgotten and she'd given him a hug.
Oh!
Oh, no!
That'd be awful.
Because It seems almost... forgetfulness runs in his family. Right. Forgetfulness about very pivotal things.
So we've got
you've got John. You've got an inaccurately named worm.
Yeah.
I'm still just imagining
a big
flesh colour. It's going to be white as well because it's just drinking the milky treasure.
It's definitely green from all of the pantomime and drawing versions I've seen of it. But let me give you some of the sweet dialects from the song again. 2 minutes.
Don't sing again.
I'm not going to sing. All right. Hook. H-E-U-K. That means hook.
If your category was...
Gem instead of home.
Dyslexia. You'd be doing really well.
He would swell your little burns alive.
He would swell little burns alive.
Yeah, we've got the word Kai for cows.
These are just words. They're not names.
They're not names. Damn.
John,
damn your knowledge.
You've got
grammar.
John Lampton, Lampton Worm. That's only three different words. One of them is spelt wrong.
I've got to tell you, there's also a well.
That's only one more word, and it's hill. And there's a well, Wormwell.
Wormwell,
is it?
Well,
right.
Not anymore, it's gone. But there was a Wormwell.
What's the stone? Does the stone have a name?
The
stone in the river. Oh, the river was called Weir. That was funny. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. The stone doesn't have a name.
Right.
I think the stone may have been lost.
No.
Kerry Nutman, he did the animation for the...
That's a nice name. Kerry Nutman is a lovely name. Shout out to Kerry Nutman. No. I think this is a two. Because you... And it's not, no. Yeah, it's a two. And that is being very generous. Because the worm, it's not even spelt with a Y. So it would look interesting written down. You just imagine that. It's what the episode is going to be called. Lampton Worm.
That's going to bring him in.
Is it?
Yeah, people are going to read that and go, ooh, ooh. I wonder how big it is.
Oh, a worm. Great.
All right, two.
It's got nine holes. How does that work? Is one of the holes the mouth, and then it's got four down the side?
I think it's running the other side down its nose. Don't know.
Is it nine on each side, or?
I think it's nine on each side, because otherwise it'd be asymmetrical.
But then, that would make it a bit like, ugh, it's weird.
Is it going to get me any more points for naming?
No. Numbering.
Two out of five. There's loads of numbers.
Yeah, there's not. Should have got a number. Maybe you've got a number.
I haven't got that in my list of categories, numbering.
I don't think
nine kais, he wrapped himself seven times around the hill.
Yeah, or nine in some reports. I mean, this is
really scoring highly. All right, the next category. I've got to scrape back. Supernatural. Classic traditional category. Supernatural. What do you mean, Are you aware to what an enormous size he growed?
Yeah, but things can be big. Worms.
Nine times round a hill big.
Worms can be big. People thought that worms, if you cut them in half, were two worms until about 5 years ago.
I think I found out about that last year.
Yeah, only Q. If there wasn't QI, people would still think that if you cut a worm in half, it becomes two worms.
Well, you're very
lucky. I'm talking about real worms.
You're very lucky that this worm didn't produce two worms when cut in half. Otherwise, we'd have a variety.
A load of Lampton worms.
I'd be scoring even higher for numbering than...
And then it wouldn't be a dragon, it would just be a worm. Just a big worm.
All right, well, since this doesn't happen, it proves it's a dragon. So, what could be more supernatural? We've got that, we've got a witch.
She's, basically, all we know about this witch is she's not very good at singing.
We've got a prophecy. I mean, a curse. I forgot. I forgot what it was. It's a curse.
You got a curse. People can say a lot of stuff, though, can't
they? But also,
they?
He brings the whole thing on himself by being such a bad lad. By swearing at the river.
On a Sunday.
On a Sunday. In one of the accounts I've been reading, it's introduced as the sin. It's all a moral story teaching him a lesson through supernatural occurrences.
It's only a three, though, really, isn't it?
Flipping heck.
Because it's kind of... It's getting into that... cryptozoology stuff, which doesn't come across as that supernatural. They're not really... No one does any magic. A curse...
Are you marking me down because you think it might be true? And there could be a giant worm?
It could be... I'm not saying I think it's true. I'm just saying a giant worm isn't...
That drank the milk of nine cows every day
a giant
and ripped
worm
up trees with its tail.
That loved dairy goodness? What was it?
Milky treasure. which brings... I'll get a three out of five. Fine. That brings me on to my next category, milk. I've written that with an exclamation mark.
You're quite right.
Milk. It was a fairly milk-obsessed creature.
Yeah, this is, yeah, this.
It occasionally ate bairns when they were sleeping.
Yeah, because probably they smell of milk.
Yeah, obviously you're right, it was probably the scent of mother's milk that attracted them.
Same reason cats steal children's souls or whatever it is they're supposed to do.
Yeah, same reason cats steal children's souls.
Yeah, because of the milk. That's probably the bare breasts of the lady that you mentioned. Yep, it was just going after her milk.
Milky treasure.
Her mammary glands. Mm. Her mammary delights or whatever. That is the name of my student band. We didn't do well. Back to Milky Delights.
Back to the category. The category milk.
Milk. Yeah, heart five. I'm going to give you five. I can't imagine there being more milk in this story. Like, this story is so obsessed with milk that the characters in this story drink milk even though they know that it's going to anger a giant, albeit worm, but a giant angry worm. Someone definitely, at least once, I'll have a little bit of that milk. When they're dealing, like, they're saving children's lives and stuff by doing it, it's like, well, I do quite like milk. Like, yeah, you're getting 5 out of 5 for milk, definitely.
5 out of 5. And finally, you've been fairly harsh with me. I think you're going to have to score me highly in the category of unarguable famousness. I think you'll agree, it's an extremely famous story.
Mm.
Just ask your friend and mine, Brian Ferry.
Yeah, I don't know, because he might... Would he reply in song, or would he go, yeah, I've heard of it?
Let's not ask Brian Ferry.
Yeah.
Let's just assume that he's strongly endorsing it.
Well, yeah, definitely. He wanted to bring it to the world, and it's not done well.
Word of it reached as far as Palestine during the Crusades. Otherwise, Lambton wouldn't have heard about it.
Yeah, that was a direct message. That doesn't count.
No, he just heard rumours.
No, I'm sure someone told him.
He would be in Palestine, and one Palestinian would say to another, have you heard about that? Because we haven't got any problems here. Have you heard about that giant giant worm they've got in Washington? They say DC, if by that you mean County Durham, yes. And Lambton said, what's that you say?
Sorry, lads.
I happen to be from Washington.
Shut up. Tell me about the worm. No, it's not.
Oh!
It is arguably not famous.
You've drawn me to your bosom only for me to find you wearing a suit of spike-head spearheads.
Yes, yeah. The Lambton worm is not that famous. I'm sorry, the Northeast.
What about the panto?
Yeah, what about the panto? That's not the subject of a pantomime.
It's very popular with the kids.
Jack and the Beanstalk.
With an opening... I mean, how many pantos have an opening song which mentions children being eaten alive?
Yeah. Shut up. I'm going to do my panto. No, like, even the budget. Why have you made the main antagonist of this pantomime a worm?
Like, well, in a lot of the pictures it has 4 legs, so I assume it was like a pantomime horse, but like the bad guy.
That sounds terrifying and inaccurate. So what, Ross Kemp?
Yeah,
is
he slays Lord
the Lambton worm?
No, I'd put him as like Lord Lambton, the guy who at the end.
Okay, so he's old Lord Lambton.
He's knocking on a bit now, Ross Kemp. He's not going to play young Lambton.
No, well, no, he wouldn't, because it's a panto. It'd have to be a girl, wouldn't it? That's the other thing about pantos. If you don't know pantos,
that's why I mentioned cabaret, because it's sort of cross dressing, slightly sexy, but it is children's entertainment kind of a way.
And then you got the actor that played Harold Bishop in Neighbours as the Lambton worm. Kind of a Jabba the Hutt figure.
Mm.
I'm warming to this. Is this out of copyright? Could we stage a production?
Oh, yeah, we can stage a production of it. I don't think we can put Jabba the Hutt in it, but
A Hutt-esque sort of thing. And then, you've got the lady with the wounds as the Princess Leia role in the Golden Bikini.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not even a non-speaking role. She doesn't even feature in the story. She's just there and topless. I'm not endorsing that.
Yeah, I think we could do this.
Yeah. So really, the fame we're measuring is not just the fame of the story to date. It's the fame of our high-budget Hollywood...
Pantomime
remake.
Yes.
That will inevitably take the world by storm.
And if we get Ross Kemp on board, Google him, then that will make it... I think, yeah, I'd give it a 4 out of 5. 4 out of 5.
So after you said that, your face said, and that's all you're getting.
Mm.
4 out of 5.
And we'll put it on next year. And then it will be unarguably famous.
Yes.
This is Edinburgh.
Yeah,
Lambton. Lambton. No.
Just.
Worm. Exclamation mark. With a Y.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But instead of selling ice cream at the interval on the trays, it's just milk.
Yeah, it's just
gallons of milk.
9 cows worth of milk. and help yourself, lads. Yeah. Dig in, here's a straw.
This tale is for anyone who's ever wondered what goes on inside a boy king's head. It's not what you expect.
Prepare yourself, Alistair. This is a high-octane thrill ride of a story. This has got everything you could want from... I'm just going to tell the story, actually. It's got...
Because you've oversold it at this point.
I think so, yeah, mate. I think
I am prepared for something really intense.
You're on everything. Yes. Okay. It begins, we open in Winchcombe.
Oh, you've lost me. I'm walking out of the theatre. I've left. I'm in a cab.
It's Saxon times. And Winchcombe is the capital of Winchcombshire.
Hmm.
Yeah, now right. He's coming back.
I'm back in. Yeah. Whoa, stop the taxi. I can still hear the unexpected twist.
And this is in the Kingdom of Mercia.
I know, I like that.
Yeah, and we're in AD 788.
All right.
King Kenulf, yeah, the king of Mercia, founded an abbey. And then a few years later, he died. And he was succeeded by his 7-year-old son, Kenelm. He also had two older daughters, Kenulf. We only know the name of the oldest one, Quendreda, which is a great name.
It's quite an evil name.
But we don't know what the middle daughter's name was. We don't know if it was a Ken prefix or just, a made-up series of sounds.
Is Quen the feminine version of Ken?
Oh, maybe. That's a good point. I was trying to think of were there any female names that began with Ken?
speculative research.
Some great research I've not done. So Quendreda, the older sister, she wanted the throne, obviously. She's getting passed over for her 7-year-old brother. That's got to be annoying. I don't have any siblings myself, but I imagine that's quite annoying.
Well, my sister is 2 years younger than me, and when we were children, could run faster than me and beat me at all video games.
Oh.
And that, including one I made. I invented a video game, and then we played it, and she beat me at it. I know how Kenelm feels.
Quendreda.
No, yeah, sorry, I know how Quendreda... I've forgotten.
In this scenario, you're Quendreda.
Well, I know how Quendreda feels.
But she didn't try and exact revenge by creating a video game. She persuaded Ascobert, which is a person's name, not a computer game from the 80s. It does sound like it would be.
Yeah, the 8th century version of Ask Jeeves.
Yes. And now, Ascobert was Kenelm's tutor. Quendreda persuaded Ascobert to murder Kenelm. Ascobert took Kenelm hunting in the Clent Hills. Let me say that again. The Clent Hills. and they went on this little hunting trip, Ascobert and Kenelm. And Kenelm had a little nap. Come on, he's 7. Probably just had a 8th century version of Ribena and a little lie down. And while he was having his sleep, Ascobert dug the grave for Kenelm.
He's getting ahead of himself there. A little bit.
Yeah.
It's hubristic. At the very least.
Yeah. My point of view is if you have been tasked with killing a 7-year-old, what you should do when that 7-year-old is asleep is kill that 7-year-old.
I've always said that.
Don't do you don't need the prep. So during this hubristic grave digging, Kenelm awoke and said, "This is not the place ordained for you to kill me." And he stuck his staff into the ground and black flowers bloomed from it. And this was meant to be proof.
I know Kenelm's your protagonist, but this is a creepy kid.
It's a bit weird,
isn't it?
That
is a creepy... It's like, have you seen The Babadook?
Yes.
Like the best thing about that is you wouldn't mind if that kid got killed because he's awful.
It's a bit annoying.
Kenelm is a bit of a Babadook kid.
He's saying...
Black flowers bloom. This is not the place ordained. Creepy. Kill that kid.
In one version of the story, it praises him for saying that he was like singing a song or something, taking his death in good spirits. Spoiler alert, Ascobert heeded the words that this was not the place ordained to kill him, just took him down the road and killed him down there.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So that sort of backfired on Kenelm.
I was just growing attached to the creepy little child.
So Ascobert decapitates him and buries the head and the body under a bush. I guess it's a different guy. So that even that digging of the grave was a waste of time.
He took I would have at least taken them back to the first.
Oh, and also, while he was doing all this, a dove flew out of the base of Ken Elm's skull.
That sentence ends in a place it doesn't begin.
Yeah.
Say that again.
So, Ascobert has decapitated a seven-year-old, and he's put him in a grave, and he's filling that grave in, and while he's doing that, a dove flies out of the little boy's head. And the dove flies to Rome to see the... allow me to finish. The dove flies to Rome to see the Pope, and he drops a scroll at the Pope's feet, which... the Pope can't read because the Pope can't read English. Fortunately, there's an Englishman there. He translates the note for the Pope. The note says, "In Clent cow pasture, under a thorn, of head bereft, lies Ken Elm, king born." So the dove is grassed up Ascobert.
With the appropriate authority, a.k.a. the Pope.
The Pope, yeah. The classic crime-solving Pope.
I mean, it really takes a swerve from the moment of the beheading onwards, that story.
It goes from quite realistic sort of family tragedy to, crazy.
Can I check, are you improvising the bit where someone translates it?
No.
That's part of the story.
That's part of the story.
Why would the dove not just have written it in Latin?
How could the magic dove... Yeah, that's like the world... That's what everyone... That's like the Esperanto of the day, Latin. Yeah. Like, everyone could have known Latin. Like, kings and... That sort of people, they probably knew Latin. Yes. That's what the Pope deals in.
Why would the... If you can write a magic scroll and you're a dove, write it... That is ridiculous. I'm outraged.
Because I was thinking about this. I was thinking like, oh, that's quite clever of the dove to write of head bereft as like a clue in there. But then I realised, oh no, the dove would have written that down anyway because he's not getting out. Unless the Ken Elm's had his head cut off.
I like that both of us have assumed that the dove wrote it.
What, is there a little mouse inside with a quill also in the guy's skull? The seven-year-old's skull. Because a seven-year-old's head's not much bigger than a dove.
But I guess that it has only just occurred to me at this point that the dove is probably representative of his soul.
Oh.
Sorry, the look of sadness. Is that the end of the story?
Of course not.
So what does the Pope do?
So the Pope sends orders to Wilfrid, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and Wilfrid gets on the 8th century version of the blower, telephone, not a telephone, whatever, probably, you'd think, carrier pigeon, but now it sounds like that's someone's, he'd have to decapitate someone in order to send one of them. Anyway, however he does it, he gets word to the monks of Winchcombe Abbey, and they start looking for the body of Ken Elm. They manage to find the body of Ken Elm with the assistance of a white cow.
As a, like a sidekick?
Yeah, he's basically... The cow apparently started mooing at a bush, and...
Well, and that's out of character for a cow. No wonder that caught their attention.
And they were
What's that cow playing at?
Let's have a dig under here, and they dig up the head, the body, and the knife. The Pope, thanks to the classic chain of investigation...
chain of
Pope,
command.
Next down, Archbishop of Canterbury. Next down, monks. Next down, white cow. I mean, the white cow's the hero in this tale. He's doing the real groundwork.
Yeah, he's the one on the beat who knows the people involved. He can talk their language, or well, he can moo at appropriate bushes.
So, well, I guess they thought cow pasture... Who knows cow pasture better than cows? Oh, it hasn't finished.
What?
Yeah, so they take... Oh, there was something about a spring as well. A magic spring comes out when they find the body. Well, either where they found the body, a spring comes from, or when the monks had a rest, taking the body back to Winchcombe Abbey, and where they had a rest, a spring came from, and it's there's a little building there now, apparently, still.
You seem really unimpressed with that part of the story.
Well, yeah, because it doesn't involve birds flying out of people's heads... Translations, which I love, or detective cows. DSI Moo Man.
I, as the cigar chomping studio exec from the start of this story, am well up for the detective cow. The rest of it, I can take on it, frankly. But detective cow, yes.
Not even...
Take my money.
You don't want a dove that can write a memo?
That's his secretary.
Yeah, that's true.
And they've got an on-again, off-again, will-they-won't-they relationship.
Who's bad cop, good cop? Bad dove, good cow. That's your name. Anyway, so the monks transport Kenelm's body back to the abbey. And on the way, evil Quendreda, she's still angry that this has all gone on. Although she seems to kind of be getting away with the thing. But anyway, her just desserts happen because she tries to curse the funeral procession by reading Psalm 108 backwards. Now, Psalm 108 is known as the cursing psalm. In some reports, in some versions of this story...
Yeah, let's be careful about the words we use.
In some versions of the story, it's Psalm 53, which is the atheist psalm. I do wonder why these psalms made it to the final part of the Bible. The cursing psalm and the atheist psalm, they don't seem on brand.
The atheist psalm.
Yeah, because I think it starts with like, he who believed in God is a fool because there is no God, or something like that. Which you get, that doesn't seem...
That's really off message.
Yeah. So she tries to read that backwards in order to curse the funeral procession, but her eyes burst and cover the page with blood, and she dies in agony, and she's unable to read anymore because not only has she no eyes, the piece of paper that's written on is covered in the blood from her no eyes.
I really like the attention to making sure she couldn't read it. That reminds me of, you know, I'm a big fan of...
How can that remind you of something?
Well, that reminds me of another eye-exploding story. Funny thing that happened... Sorry, your cat is sniffing at my teacup. I realise I really need to finish that sentence. The story that reminds me of is, I'm a big fan of the history of European fairy tales. And I think it's 17th or maybe 18th century. In the Charles Perrault version of Cinderella, at the end of the story, the ugly sisters, the famous ugly sisters... apologise and they're forgiven by Cinderella, and she gives them each a salon in Prince Charming's castle, which is a really nice ending.
Tanning?
No. Well, no. This time these were salon stories. So fantasy women would hang out together in their salon, and they would tell one another fairy tales, and Perrault started writing them down, or perhaps he kicked off the telling of them by writing them down.
Right.
100 years later. In the Brothers Grimm, who were German, not French, wrote their version of that story. In their version, at the wedding, the ugly sisters are there and they're throwing rice. And then doves come and peck out their eyes.
Ooh.
Which it gives you, I think, a sense of the different attitudes to justice that the German and French peoples have.
Yeah. A nice little salon.
Yeah.
And a business.
Your own salon.
Your own small business.
Or an eye pecking out.
No eyes at all. So, Kenelm was interred at the abbey, and there was a shrine there which was visited many times throughout the years, and there's like, you know, miracles and all that sort of stuff. Just listed as some miracles, like that's. We're not going to go into detail about them. You've had enough from this story, excitement. In 1815, the abbey was excavated, and they found a coffin with a skeleton of a boy with a long knife beside it. Unfortunately, the bones and the knife turned to dust in contact with the air.
I don't know how many stories we've recorded at this point, but I've heard the phrase, all turned to dust.
Turned to dust.
So many times.
It's a good way of not having to prove your story.
It is, isn't it?
I saw it. Oh, have you got evidence? It turned to dust. Why? Contact with air.
It's very much the folklorist's dog ate my homework.
And so to the scores.
Okay. What are your categories?
Oh, they are legion. They're called legion for they are many.
Well, what's the first category then?
First category, I'm going to go with supernatural.
You're opening with supernatural. Okay.
I think so, yeah.
It's not normal to have a dove in your head.
No.
I'm not saying that.
As far as we know, because any one of us could have a dove in our heads.
Yes.
For
most people aren't beheaded.
Mm.
So many people's doves just stay in when
and die. When they die, no one thinks to look. Should we have a look inside that skull, see if there's any little bird bones?
I think, yeah, a dove that goes to the Pope.
A dove that goes to the post office.
That would be impressive.
Yeah.
That's supernatural, definitely.
Yeah.
The
head doves.
The staff with the flowering staff.
Yeah.
The creepy, creepy child.
annoying children, and unfortunately, they're very real.
Yeah, but there's a certain type of annoying child that belongs to sort of the spooky literature.
Mm. Ones that can say the word ordained.
Yeah. He's creepy, creepily spooky, and I'm glad he was murdered.
But he was a king, though, so...
Are you saying his gift for language probably wasn't supernatural?
No, he probably had lessons.
All right, well, that'll knock some points off for that. Yeah, I let you walk into that, didn't I?
I could feel that I was being led down. It was like I was being taken hunting in Clent Hills before being decapitated, yeah.
So we've got the eyes bursting.
Classic eye burst.
Forth from the face.
Yep.
That's any other supernatural occurrence in the story?
Detective Cow.
And Detective Cow. I think that's a 4 out of 5. I'm knocking 1 point off because the child may simply have been insufferably pretentious.
Yeah.
But yeah, 4 out of 5.
Okay. Gore.
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 Occasional visiting category.
Gore.
Gore. Well, again, eyes bursting.
Yeah.
Decapitation. There's a lot of blood there. And the murder of your little brother. That's not. I mean, we're talking about it as if it's fun to murder children, but in reality, that would be horrible.
Getting the teacher as well, the trusted figure.
Is that who Azkaban was his teacher?
Asks Azkaban.
That I didn't realize.
So maybe he's the guy that's responsible for that annoying. This is not the place ordained for you to kill me. I'm surprised he didn't actually just kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
But he saw a stick, black flowers. So
well, I think it's only a 3 out of 5 for gore.
For gore, we've got
one beheaded child and 2 popped eyes. That's not that much.
What
I want to be clear on, because the thing is, it's because I'm visualising when the dove comes out, I'm visualising it as pure white rather than sodden and red
and like
the blood of a child's head.
Sort of flicking bits of brains off its wings before it flies off.
If that...
And just hastily scribbling a note, probably in blood.
Well, if that were the case, it's a 4.
Mm.
But I don't think you have any evidence that the dove didn't come out pure, gleaming white. Because I don't think it would have been let in to see the Pope. A bloody dove. People would say, go away and clean yourself up.
Clean yourself up.
Before you get an audience with his Popeness. Must have been less gory, so it's a 3.
That's a shame. Okay. This is perhaps related to supernatural. Magic animals.
Magic animals. What have you got?
A dove.
A dove
that can command...
You're leaning heavily on this dove, but okay.
The head dove. And Detective Cow.
Now, was the cow magic, or was it just damn good at his job? That's the question I have for you.
I suppose that's the thing with detective work. It's like, you make it look like it's magic, but it's actually... He'd probably done a lot of, you know, going around, having a chat with the squirrels. Because isn't it someone that said, any detective work sufficiently advanced should be indistinguishable from magic? Especially if it's done by a cow.
Yeah, I think someone said that.
Just now.
It's been said at least once, I'd wager.
I think this brilliantly Disneyfies the whole story.
How dare you bring Walt Disney into a story involving a child's beheading?
But I think it gives it a little sort of, a Cinderella sort of aspect of like, oh, there's a little dove flying out of the kid's head.
But again, imagine you're pitching this to Walt Disney is now the cigar-chomping executive. You get to the bit, and then the child is beheaded. He's going to raise an eyebrow there. No amount of doves.
And buried in a shallow grave. Well, we can show that off camera. No, that needs to be on camera, because...
Well, I think you have one magical animal.
And one animal who is... damn good at his job.
So I'm giving you 1 out of 5.
One animal.
Because you could obviously have had 5 magical animals in this story.
That
Sorry.
Cow was one day away from retirement. Okay, this has to work. The category of naming.
Well.
Come on.
I can't help but... And I don't think I didn't notice this while you were telling the story. You can't just keep saying Clent with a strong T and hope you're going to convince me that it's...
That's a great name.
It's a good name. Okay, so you've got Clent.
Clent Hills.
Kenulph. Quendredda, Azkaban, it's 5 out of 5.
Yes.
No, I thought it wasn't that good, but as I went through the...
Mystery Sister, we can only assume that that's a brilliant name.
But even Mystery Sister sounds like a decent student band.
Why am I giving these names away?
So, any other good names? I've already scored it, but...
Yes. Wilfred, the Archbishop of Canterbury. All right, Wilf. right, Wilf?
It's not that good. I would love to take it down to four, but I can't because I'm already...
Okay, I'm going to get it back up because in some versions of the story, Askobert is called Askbert. It's as simple as that. The Columbo factor.
Mm.
One last thing, Alistair.
Sorry. All right, yes.
The Columbo factor.
Mm. Yeah, because we know who did it, and then the story is just watching that person get caught.
So yes. That,
like in Columbo. So yes, you've made your case.
Are there any Columbos that don't finish with the criminal's eyes bursting?
I think every single
over a hymn
one.
Book.
Yeah, most of them. Most of them do. I mean, I guess that's why he wore that waterproof coat. Because of constant eye juice.
Oh, he had a bad eye as
well.
We don't know if it burst. Probably not.
We don't know about the background of that. Presumably someone was reading the atheist psalm.
Yeah.
But he was standing at an angle. It's really unfair for us to bring Peter Falk's missing eye into...
A story with exploding eyes. I'm trying to get points. The Columbo factor.
All right, no, you're right. Yeah, that's...
Poorly eyes.
It may be inconsiderate of you, but it's worth an extra point.
Well,
we don't do half points.
No, I know. It's Columbo. We got the Pope.
Oh, yeah, the Pope.
DSI Pope.
Yeah.
The cigar-chomping Pope shouting out, "Oh, Wilfred, get in here. I'm going to take your minor... your silly hat's on the line. Find out where Kenelm is. Find out which cow field in Clent Hills this beheaded 7-year-old is." And then he's like, "The Pope's busting my ear. Monks, you got to help me out." And then the monks go out, I'm imagining Keystone Cop style, and then...
Sort of blowing a whistle, waving their monk staff.
Trying to get into a cart and falling out of that cart and all sorts of stuff. And then, again, one day away from retirement, Detective Cow. They think, this guy's put out your pasture. He's actually, that's quite an insult to cows, isn't it?
Mm.
That's their day-to-day. They must be like, well, have a little bit more thought when you use these phrases.
It's 5 out of 5 for the Columbo factor.
Yes!
Your short parody of all detective drama has convinced.
You have been listening to Lawmen. The Lawmen are Alistair Beckett King
and James Shakeshaft.
The Lawmen will return later this year with Series 2, telling tales of folklore from the British Isles and beyond. If you have a local legend you'd like us to investigate, tweet us at LawmenPod or email contact@lawmenpodcast.com. Lawmen is spelled L-O-R-E, men. It's wordplay. If you enjoyed Series 1 of Lawmen, please do rate and subscribe. Maybe write us a review.
And if you didn't enjoy Lawmen Series 1, shut up, shut up, shut up. And I'm Alistair's Batman and Robin, James Shakeshaft. And I'm Alistair's Man Friday and Girl Tuesdays, James Shakeshaft. And I'm Alistair's Mars Bar and Milkshake, James Shakeshaft. These are sounding more sexual than I'd intended.